All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads. Happy Wednesday, everybody, and welcome to the third quarter. Today is July 1st, 2026, and I hate this story, but it is the top story this morning. I would love to talk about anything else, believe me, but I can't not talk about this. President Trump released 927 pages of financial disclosures yesterday for the year 2025. And in that 927-page story of President Trump's business dealings in 2025 included roughly $1.2 billion that the president made with his various crypto ventures. About $600 million were made in his Trump meme coin. About $500 million made from various World Liberty financial ventures. And then, of course, he also had plenty of other income from things like Trump steaks, Trump watches, Trump the flamethrower. The kids love it. Look, I don't care about the steaks and the watches. It's, in my opinion, silly. I don't know who would want to buy those things, but I don't consider them outright corrupt. He's using his brand on a product and he's selling it. I mean, people buy Snuggies for some reason. I don't care. I guess I feel the same way about Trump watches. But the crypto stuff, that doesn't sit right with me. Why? Because they were pump and dumps, guys. Look at what these things have done, in particular the meme coin. It's lost like 99% of its value. World Liberty Financial and its tokens, not much better. Lost like 95% of its value. These were straight up pump and dumps. And hey, it's nothing new. There's pump and dumps everywhere, right? I went through the last crypto cycle. We see it with stocks all the time. But the involvement of a sitting U.S. president is a whole new dimension to this. They're doing it out in the open. They are doing it without fear. They're saying, I can get away with anything. And that is a problem. And look, I voted for the guy three times. What were my choices? We had a potato who likes chocolate chip ice cream, a cackling communist, or an egomaniacal crook. We had lousy options. I wish we could do better. There's 350 million of us in this country. Are those the best choices we can put up? Apparently, when you put enough of us together in a group, our collective behavior is so awful that this is what we come up with. But look, guys, if you're looking at somebody walking into a store and just taking whatever they want without paying, if you shake your head every time you go into a store and the freaking deodorant is locked up behind plexiglass and you got to get somebody's attention in the store, can you please come unlock the deodorant so my armpits don't stink? Because so many people stole deodorant, they got to lock the shit up now. If that bugs you, then this has to bug you, because white-collar crime creates blue-collar crime. Abso-freaking-lutely. White-collar crime is an industrial production line that mass-produces blue-collar crime. And you better believe when the average Joe or some poor guy in some poor neighborhood turns on the TV and sees white-collar crime just being treated like it's normal, everybody does it, it's okay, and he says, to hell with it. I'm going to go knock over a 7-Eleven. If they can do it, I can do it. It's societal breakdown happening in real time. And it is so common. It is in every corner of finance now. And again, the involvement of a sitting U.S. president just makes this so much worse. And if you're sitting there saying, oh, I think the SEC is going to clean this up, or the CFTC is going to clean this up, guys, the fines are the cost of doing business. In the rare occasion when they actually do prosecute any of this stuff, the fines are a joke. And that's largely why I even have this channel, and what we talk about is to just warn people about how rampant this stuff is. And it's in everywhere. And unfortunately, you have to be borderline paranoid in order to avoid getting robbed, because there is this entire industry has created all around taking money from your pocket and putting it in theirs, all using various acronyms and terms you don't understand to make you think it's okay. All right, so that's going on this morning. End of rant on that topic. Nike earnings came out. A couple of big takeaways from Nike earnings. The stock is down this morning, but it's off its lows from last night. It was getting clobbered last night. It's caught a little bit of a bounce since, but still in the red. China sales down 12%. The Chinese consumer is doing worse than they're letting on. We've had a couple of stories over the last couple of weeks all leading to that effect. All the knock-on effects of the collapse in the Chinese real estate market. You can see it with a 12% decline in Chinese sales for Nike. Also, Nike sales were aided by a $986 million tariff refund. And so that's making the results look a little rosier than they would otherwise be. Revenue down 1% overall. Not a great quarter for Nike. Turnaround taking longer than expected. We also got an interesting story. EchoStar has filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. You might be saying, EchoStar, who TF is that? EchoStar is the owner of Dish Network and Sling TV. And they filed for bankruptcy with $25 billion in debt, ongoing subscriber losses due to streaming. I don't think there's necessarily any big macro signals in this story, right? Dish Network is a dead business, a dying business. We're talking about Comcast, I think, earlier this week. That's a dying business. $25 billion in debt potentially going bad, that could be significant. Possibility of some counterparty risk or something going on there. If enough people lose money on those bonds, you could have contagion effects. But this company does have one last trick up its sleeve, one very valuable asset that could prevent those losses from coming to fruition. We'll talk about that one. We had JOLTS came out yesterday, job openings and labor turnover survey, an increasingly worthless data point because it showed job openings in the United States were up by 9,000 last month. Hey, that's great. 7.594 million job openings in the United States. We're all going to have work. We're all going to be rich. But why was hiring down? Why is it that month after month, there's more jobs that are supposedly hiring, but less people getting hired? Well, it's because a lot of those job openings are just fake. It's the simplest explanation for that. Speaking of the job market, you got Microsoft is laying off thousands of people again. Got to save money. Microsoft needs more money to burn in the furnace of artificial intelligence. And so they're cutting people in order to raise that money. We've got a lot going on in the Middle East around Iran and oil this morning. We've got Iran is refusing to meet with U.S. envoys. There are indirect talks where we talk to the Qataris and then the Iranians talk to the Pakistanis and then the Pakistanis and the Qataris get together and they're like, he says this, but he says this. Okay, they go back, they have more conversations, and then a few days later, we've still gone freaking nowhere. That's going on here. Iran wants to control the strait. They want to do their little toll booth thing, and they want all their money unlocked. Iran, the United States obviously did not win the war, did not achieve any of the objectives we set out to achieve, but Iran is way overplaying their hand here. They're demanding too much, and the war's going to start up again. I mean, it'll start up on a weekend, and it'll be over by Sunday night, just in time for the market to open on Monday again, like it has five or six other times. But they're just asking too much, and the world is not going to go for a toll booth in the Strait of Hormuz. It's just not going to happen. Now, the Wall Street Journal was out with an article yesterday about Iran's diverging priorities. Some infighting in Iran, potentially, with the civilian government really wants those billions of dollars in funds unlocked for any number of reasons. The country is an absolute hellhole, economically speaking. And, of course, you know, if they can win the concessions and the negotiations to get those funds unlocked, they could do a lot with that money. But the IRGC is emphasizing that they want to control the Strait of Hormuz because the money would go directly to the IRGC and they could use it to sponsor terrorism all over the world, kill people, build missiles, you know, all that fun stuff the Iranians just love to do everywhere. And so you've got potentially some infighting going on among the Iranian government here, the many facets of the Iranian government. And in totally unrelated news, the IRGC Navy deputy was just killed in a traffic accident. His SUV rolled over. I'm going to say there's probably about a 1% chance that was actually a traffic accident and that his car actually rolled over. Who killed him is a good question. It could be the moderates in the Iranian government. It could have been us. It could have been the Israelis. Or maybe it was just a traffic accident. I really doubt it was a traffic accident. Meanwhile, oil's just sitting here around $68 a barrel, just whistling past the graveyard. The oil market continues to see something the rest of us can't see and just assumes that the oil is going to be flowing freely here. And last but not least, we've got to talk about Ardian. This is a French alternative asset investment firm. They are packaging secondary stakes into a $1 billion debt offering called a collateralized fund obligation. That's a lot of financial lingo, Jack. Whatever are you talking about? Well, secondary stakes. All right, a secondary is when you've got an investor who bought a stake in a private equity fund. generally a limited partner, one of the smaller investors who bought into the PE fund. It could be an insurance company, it could be a pension fund or a family office. They buy into this private equity fund. Ah, but private equity firms and funds are not worth what they have been advertising because they overpaid for companies in 2022 when interest rates are low. Those companies are not making money now and the interest rates have gone up, but they don't want to admit how much money they've lost. And so they're all limiting redemptions, coming up with all these cockamamie plans to raise money. And the limited partners are saying, you know what? I'm not going to sit around and wait for the general partners to pay us back, the fund managers. They're not going to give us our money back. So I am going to sell my stake in this firm to a third party. That sale is known as a secondary offering. And you've got this firm, Ardian, is buying up these secondary offerings. And now they're packaging them up into a bond and they're selling it to investors. And they're calling that bond a collateralized fund obligation. And if that sounds awfully familiar to the collateralized debt obligation and what they did with mortgage bonds in the GFC, well, the only reason is because that is exactly what they did with mortgage bonds in the GFC. You got to love this private equity industry, the things they come up with. They always call it something different, but it's always the same gag. Guys, we got a lot to talk about again this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget all that good algorithmic stuff, you know, the like button, the subscribe button, all that stuff, so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every day. Right now, the S&P 500 is in the red this morning, 30 points or 0.41% to the downside. The Dow is off by 190 points, 0.36% in the red this morning. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, down 0.9%, 273 points in the red for the NASDAQ. So stocks are down across the board this morning. We've got a stronger dollar once again, 101.57. The dollar is up by another 40 basis points this morning. Fed Chairman Kevin Warsh is speaking as we speak, as a matter of fact, or as I record this. Chairman Warsh from the Fed is over in Europe, I believe in Portugal, talking with the European Central Bank officials. I don't know what he is saying. Warsh generally doesn't tip his hand very often. He doesn't like to forecast what he's going to do. We'll see if that changes today, but it's possible his comments are contributing to this dollar strength this morning. Also going on, speaking of the stronger dollar, we have to mention Japanese yen, USD JPY. It's currently at 162.7. Remember, USD JPY, the number of yen to make $1. When you see this chart going higher, that is the yen getting weaker. We are on intervention watch over at the Japanese Central Bank and the Japanese Finance Ministry. Historically, 160 is when they have intervened. The yen continues to weaken. This is the weakest it's been in more than 40 years. Looking over at the bond markets, we've got an unusually large move going on in bonds this morning, considering we don't have a lot of movement elsewhere in the market. And again, this isn't a massive move in bonds. It's just bigger than the movement in other sectors this morning. Doesn't quite fit the pattern. The 30-year yield is higher by 8 basis points at 4.983%. The 10-year yield higher by almost 7.5 points, 4.496%. The two-year yield is up by 5 points and change, 4.191, and the one-month is at 3.672. That's actually lower by a point and change. It's possible we've got some rebalancing. It's the first day of the new quarter. Maybe that's why we're seeing the yields are higher here, but somebody out there is selling U.S. Treasuries, in particular on the long end of the yield curve. Maybe it's the Japanese Finance Ministry getting ready to raise the dollars and dump them on the Forex market to prop up the yen. I don't know, but yields are higher this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is higher by a couple of bucks here, $4,021, pretty much where we were yesterday, higher by $13 or 0.35% in the green. Spot silver is down by 14 cents or a quarter of a percent, $58.41 for spot silver, but I still like the shiny. Copper is lower by 1.8%, platinum higher by almost 0.6%. Palladium is off by a half a percent, and WTI crude is down another 37 cents, $69.12. We'll talk about oil in a bit here. First, let's talk about Bitcoin, $58,603. We hit a low overnight of, what did we hit? 57,717. That is the lowest for this cycle. Just a reminder, guys, we have a few more months of Bitcoin winter. I think the bottom is significantly lower than where we are currently at. All right. Meanwhile, let's talk about the main one here. Trump filing shows he took in about $1.2 billion from crypto business last year. And again, I got nothing, no problem with people making money, but it's how you make the money that's important. And in this case, it was pump and dumps. President Trump took in nearly $1.2 billion from his crypto businesses last year. A federal filing released Tuesday shows locking in profits while his investors were socked with losses. Mere startups when he took the oath of office, the new ventures have now eclipsed in revenue much of his vast property portfolio. That took him decades to accumulate. Fueling their rise were billionaire investors and Trump's own move to quash a federal crackdown on the industry. Trump got more than $500 million from his World Liberty Financial business selling new crypto products, including governance tokens, which are still locked up, by the way, according to the required annual disclosure report with the Office of Government Ethics. It also showed another crypto business, CIC Digital LLC, took in more than $600 million from sales of souvenir-type meme coins stamped with his face. That's the Trump meme coin, more than $600 million he made from that. Both tokens and coins have plunged in value since the sales. Trump also took in millions last year from selling Trump-branded Bibles, sneakers, and other small items in another unprecedented move for the presidency. The sale of Trump-branded watches alone brought in $4.7 million. The 927-page disclosure form paints a stark, if incomplete, picture of the massive growth of the president's wealth since taking office last January through a web of business interests, many of which have benefited from the policy moves of Trump's own government. Trump has insisted that his sons direct his finances, but the arrangement rejects the conflict of interest protections that his recent predecessors in office had instituted. Forbes estimates Trump's net worth at $6 billion, up from $2.3 billion in 2024. And again, here's what really bugs me. It's not the fact that he made money. I don't mind people making money. I'm a capitalist too. It's how he made the money. Look at what the official Trump meme coin has done. This is on CoinMarketCap. All right. Trump meme coin, when it was first released, it went to $44, $45. It currently trades at $1.60. All right. No offense to President Huck Tua, but I don't think it's a very presidential move to sell freaking meme coins in pump and dump scams while sitting in the highest office in the land. I think that's inappropriate. All right. And this is time and a place for everything. And running pump and dumps should not be done from the Oval Office. All right. I mean, look. What's his name? The guy in Venice, not Venezuela. The guy in Argentina did it. Malay did it. Any number of celebrities did it. Freaking Huck to a girl did it. They were all the same thing. It was the same story. And look, if you bought this thing, I'm sorry to tell you, it was less than intelligent of you to buy this. I'm trying to put it mildly. I don't want to say how freaking stupid it was to buy a Trump meme coin. But doing something stupid doesn't mean you deserve to be robbed. All right. Stupidity isn't a crime. Or as I say, show me the difference between show me the difference between dumb and illegal, and I'll have my wife's brother arrested. No offense, David. Love you. That's a line from The Big Short. But yeah, just because you're gullible doesn't mean you deserve to be robbed. And the people who bought this got robbed. They lost everything. Same thing with World Liberty Financial. This is WLFI token, which is still locked up. And yet it's lost, what, 81% of its value? It was $31. Now it's down at $5. These are pump and dumps, guys, and a sitting president shouldn't be doing that. I've said my piece. All right. Meanwhile, Nike results top estimates, even as China sales dropped 12%. Retailer expects $986 million tariff refund. Now, that pretty much encapsulates Nike's earnings pretty well there in the headline. You get China's doing terrible, but they got their tariffs back. That's pretty much the gist of it. Let's talk about some of the other stuff here. Revenue. $10.97 billion, down 1% from a year ago period. And I don't get this. This is CNBC. Maybe CNBC forgot to turn off their permeable switch here this morning, but they're saying revenue climbed to $10.97 billion, down from $11.1 billion. All right, so revenue climbed down. Climb would suggest something going up. But again, we're talking about CNBC here. These are the Tom Lee, Dan Ives hosting people, right? Kathy Wood, permeable type. So I guess we'll give them a free pass on that one. Nike's revenue in North America, its largest market, climbed by 3% to $4.83 billion. That's roughly in line with the rate of inflation. It fell short of analysts' expectations of $4.88 billion. There's that 12% drop in China there. On the call with analyst CEO Elliott Hill said the company's fully committed to winning the China market back. Overall, the results aren't there yet. We know we're not living up to our full potential, particularly in Nike sportswear and Jordan streetwear, where sell-through remains challenged, impacting both current discounting and future order books. So Nike still has inventory issues that they're working through. The stock was getting clobbered last night. It's currently down 1.75%. All things considered, it's doing all right. It was down more than 9% at one point after reporting earnings last night, but they did recover most of that since. All right, we talked about this one at the open too. Satellite TV operator Dish reportedly set to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. This one broke yesterday. Dish, the legacy satellite TV operator and owner of Sling TV, is reportedly set to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection as its parent, EchoStar, grapples with $25 billion in debt and ongoing subscriber losses. The Wall Street Journal, citing sources familiar with the situation, reported that the Englewood, Colorado-based EchoStar plans to restructure existing debt agreements through the filing after failing to merge Dish with DirecTV, among other cost-cutting moves. That filing was made official yesterday. The restructuring agreement aims to cut EchoStar's debt load, settle ongoing litigation with its creditors, and optimize its overall balance sheet. On the last fiscal call, CEO Charlie Ergen announced the restructuring of nearly $10 billion of Dish's debt with bondholders. Separately, EchoStar has run into regulatory hurdles with the FCC regarding its underused spectrum network. As a result, the company is seeking to sell its spectrum licenses to AT&T and SpaceX for a reported $22.65 billion and $17 billion, respectively. And that is the ace up the sleeve at this company, even though it's basically a dead business. I mean, they're losing subscribers left and right. Nobody does Dish Network anymore. Everybody is streaming. But they've got all this bandwidth that they're not using. And you've got AT&T and SpaceX are apparently banging down the door trying to buy that bandwidth. And that bandwidth is enough to cover their debt. So assuming that sale does go through at numbers anywhere near what they're talking about here, you shouldn't have any widespread bond losses with this one, but we'll just have to wait and see. All right. Meanwhile, we got to talk about JOLTS yesterday. It was another good day for the job market, or at least according to the official government data, which we all take with a grain of salt here, right? Job openings in the U.S. increased by 9,000 to 7.594 million in May of 2026. That's the highest since May of 2024. And well above market expectations for 7.3 million, highlighting labor market resilience despite rising energy costs in the Iran conflict. The number of job openings increased in wholesale trade, accommodation and food services, real estate, rental and leasing, but fell in healthcare and social assistance and the finance and insurance industries. All right, so job openings staying pretty high, pretty elevated here, but Endgame Macro had a pretty good take on this one yesterday on X. Yes, May openings were 7.594 million versus 7.310 million a year ago, but hires fell to 5.17 million from 5.328. So you've got more job openings, but fewer people getting hired. Private hires fell to 4.811 from 4.988 million. And the private hires rate dropped to 3.5% from 3.7%. That means the opening number improved while actual hiring deteriorated. The openings to hirings gap widened from about 1.98 million last May to 2.42 million now, which is the opposite of healthy conversion. In other words, these are fake job openings. That's the simplest explanation here. All these jobs are getting posted, but nobody's getting hired. More jobs posted day after day, fewer people hired day after day. So something is majorly wrong in the labor market here, even though they're talking about job market resilience. Well, here's your job market resilience and Business Insider this morning. Microsoft plans thousands of job cuts impacting less than 2.5% of workforce. And again, they're like, oh, thousands of job cuts, but they immediately default to, oh, it's less than 2.5% of workforce. They put these minimizing qualifiers attached to these thousands of layoffs, I guess, to make us feel better about it. I don't know. Microsoft is planning to announce job cuts soon as the tech giant continues efforts to control costs, according to people familiar with the situation. The cuts are expected to impact thousands of roles, including sales and consulting, in addition to jobs at the Xbox gaming division, the people said. This round is expected to be smaller than similar layoffs last year. This time, the cuts are projected to be less than 2.5% of the company's 220,000-person workforce. The people said the company is planning to announce the layoffs next week, although the exact timing could change. In previous years, Microsoft has sometimes cut jobs around the start of the new fiscal year on July 1st. Last year, the company eliminated 6,000 roles in May and an additional 9,000 employees, or 4% of the company's workforce, in July. The plans underscore Microsoft's moves to rein in costs as it ramps up spending on AI. The company has also been under pressure from Wall Street over concerns that AI could replace software services, including, in theory, some of Microsoft's offerings. The stock has slumped about 19% this month, its worst month since the dot-com era. Oh, any comparisons to the dot-com bubble are purely coincidental, I'm sure. Right? Microsoft cutting thousands more people because they need more money to burn on AI, which does not generate any returns for the company. I feel obligated to point that out for the thousandth time this week. More people losing their jobs there. All right. Meanwhile, we got to talk about what's going on in Iran, because this is pretty interesting here. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. Iran-U.S. indirect talks in Qatar focus on frozen funds and Strait of Hormuz control. Iran wants their cake and eat it too. Indirect talks between Iran and the United States are underway in Qatar, with discussions centered on frozen Iranian assets and the future navigation through the Strait of Hormuz, according to senior Iranian officials. The official told Reuters negotiations have been ongoing since Tuesday night in Doha. Iran is holding meetings with Qatari and Pakistani mediators, who are then relaying messages to the U.S. side. Because they're being coy. Oh, we're not going to sit down in the same room. We have to go through intermediaries because reasons. Indirect negotiations began on Tuesday night. The talks continued on Wednesday, focusing on Iran's frozen assets and the Strait of Hormuz. Separate senior Iranian sources said Tehran is seeking international recognition of its authority over the Strait of Hormuz, including the ability to regulate shipping routes and impose fees on vessels entering or leaving the Gulf. Under the current interim arrangement with the U.S., Iran has agreed to allow ships to pass through the strait without charge for 60 days. However, Iranian officials said they interpret the deal as preserving their control over who can transit and how routes are managed. Iranian sources also said negotiators are prioritizing agreement on the strait before moving to other issues in the broader peace talks with Washington. They're basically saying, acknowledge that we completely control the strait and you're going to pay us tolls and before we talk about anything else. They're really overplaying their hand here. The U.S. has taken a different position, with officials saying no country can block passage or impose tolls on an international waterway. President Trump said there will be no fees for transit unless imposed by Washington, which Washington is not going to impose tolls either. Now, as that goes on, we had this one in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Iran's diverging priorities are jeopardizing U.S. peace talks. Moderates are eager to free up billions of dollars held in Qatar, but hardliners are focusing on controlling the Strait of Hormuz. A power struggle inside Tehran is threatening U.S.-Iran peace talks, with civilian leaders seeking billions in frozen assets and hardline military officials pressing for control of the Strait of Hormuz, said officials familiar with the negotiations. Civilian leaders headed by President Masoud Pezeshkian are aiming to free up billions of dollars in frozen funds to bring some relief to the millions of Iranians struggling with the economic aftershocks of the war and the critical damage to its oil industry. Others have their own ideas. Notably, the IRGC aims to keep full control of the critical strait no matter what the cost, with an eye toward installing a lucrative toll regime to enrich the country's armed forces and dominate the security map for the entire region. The group has shown its willingness to risk the release of the billions of frozen funds in Qatar by targeting ships exiting the Persian Gulf through a U.S.-backed channel through Oman's waters rather than Iran's. The Revolutionary Guard has told mediators it would close the passage again if it doesn't get guarantees that Iran is in sole control of the strait. It also demands that the U.S. and other countries give up plans to run ships through the southern reaches of the strait near Oman. So the Iranians are pushing really hard for the strait here. You've got these differing factions within the Iranian government. One wants the money back to help the country. The other wants the toll booth so the IRGC can take all the money. And in totally unrelated news, deputy of the IRGC Navy killed in traffic accident. What are the odds that this horrible accident would happen right at this time? Fars News Agency reported on Monday, June 29th, that Rear Admiral Second Class Mohammed something I can't pronounce, Gesundheit, the political deputy of the representative office of the supreme leader in the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy, was killed following a vehicle rollover on one of the highways in Kerman province. All right, so you've got infighting in Iran between the IRGC and the civilian government. The IRGC wants to control the straits. Civilian government wants the money back. And magically, the deputy of the IRGC Navy ends up being killed in a traffic accident. And meanwhile, oil just humming along here, guys. $68.91 a barrel for WTI crude. Almost back to where we were before the war even broke out, only a few dollars higher here. I don't know. Based on everything we just read, does it sound like it's back to normal in the Strait? Not so much to me. And last but not least, Ardian packages secondary stakes into $1 billion debt vehicle. I've been warning about this stuff on and off for several years now, guys. Almost every day, there's another story about these companies that are desperate and they'll just do anything to avoid price discovery. And this is yet another example. Ardian is building some of its secondhand fund stakes into about $1 billion of debt, issuing a once niche instrument that's gaining traction as private asset managers hunt for liquidity. And again, they're hunting for liquidity because they can't sell this stuff and they need dollars. The alternative investment firm, a major player in the secondaries market, is issuing the debt through a collateralized fund obligation, according to people familiar with the matter, who asked not to be identified because the details of the transactions are confidential. CFOs, or collateralized fund obligations, are a type of securitization that groups together stakes of private capital funds into one or more pieces of rated notes, opening the door for fixed income investors such as insurers that can buy higher rated parts of the debt. In other words, it's a bond made up of near worthless stakes in private equity firms that the previous owners couldn't sell to anybody else. So they sold to Ardian, who packages it up into a bond. And who are they selling that bond to? Of course, retirees and insurers. It's always the same thing. They call it something different, but it's always the same place. It ends up in insurance and retirement plans. The market for CFOs could top $30 billion of new volume this year, up 50% from 2025, according to executives at Evercore. Guys, I've been warning about secondaries. I've been warning about continuation vehicles, CV squareds, which are continuation vehicles of continuation vehicles, net asset value financing, collateralized fund obligations now. It's all the same thing. It's the private equity and the private credit industry unable to sell the dog shit that they've accumulated. And so they are creating new acronyms, new funds, new vehicles, all to dump this stuff into retirements, even as Washington clears the way for your 401k or IRA to invest in this garbage. Now, they're using libertarian messaging like freedom of choice to make it sound like this is a good thing. No, they are shopping for bag holders, and they're looking at your retirement with a twinkle in their eye. Oh, and I got to remember to breathe in the middle of these rants. Hey, guys, that's all I got for you today. I want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Like button and the subscribe button on the way out, should you feel so inclined. I sure appreciate that. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down there in the description to all that good stuff. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.